Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
All right, folks, going to begin the call here in just a moment. All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Wednesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law, brought to you by Americans Restoring America. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. You're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. We don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. Just folks saying what they might do, where they similarly situated to you. You might get some education out of the deal. You might get some entertainment. But mainly, you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced as these opinions might be, they are still just people's opinions nonetheless. And you are always expected to have done your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. Let's go over a couple things here with Your Remedies in the Law. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner. You see that little picture of the Constitution. Click on that. You'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it, an otherwise blank page. But these two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. On the left, we have the jurisdictionary course. That's your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of this AMJUR means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. Of course, it's mostly procured and known for its very high national win rate in traffic cases. But that's not why it's up here. The reason that we've got it up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course and then you start getting into the common law default process, you'll realize very quickly that it's actually kind of a real-life homework assignment for what you've just learned in the jurisdictionary course. It lines up so perfectly that it almost seems like it was made for it. When you add with that the fact that, of course, it's primarily known for traffic scenarios, that's usually what it's used for, folks feel a little bit more, shall we say, safe to start off with that for their first time. Of course, traffic court scenarios, more often than not, are usually not of dire consequence. You know, if something, you know, God forbid, goes wrong, usually we're not, totally up the creek here. It's just a traffic scenario. These things can be fixed. And so folks feel more comfortable with trying their first time out without the training wheels, if you will, using the common law default process. Both of these items are very generously priced, asking just a small contribution of $250 for jurisdictionary and $150 for the common law default process. And so we hope you'll pick those up at your earliest convenience. All right, on to the next subject. If I can point everybody's attention to, again, the homepage of Eurevity. You see now, everybody's probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of Eurevity, you're met with that little blue box that pops up. It asks you if you want to continue on to the site that you were visiting, you're requesting, or do you want to stay for a moment and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we're doing this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There's multiple information providers talking about many different subjects, as well as many other features and study groups that set Eurevity is in the law. And then EurevityIsInTheLaw.com is just one of a couple dozen different websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit there for you to see, and we'll hope that you'll do that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether we might have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, maybe if we have an educational process that would line up nicely with your particular scenario, feel free to email me, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com, and I'll get back with you as quickly as possible. Or you can also call the 1-800 number. It's 1-800-625-4250. And somebody will usually be with you very quickly. All right, Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends, tell your family about it. There's absolutely no charge for Grass Fire Communications. That's, of course, that map of the United States that you see on virtually every website that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. You have a very easy setup. Set up wizard, you know, put your name in here, click next, put your zip code in here, click next. Then it'll present you with a long list of topics. Topics can range anything from status change, credit card issues, home foreclosures, IRS, asset protection, veterans' rights, health rights, and on. You name it. If you think of it, you'll find something in that list that's either it or close enough. And then, of course, as you're wrapping up there, it'll ask you something about the radius. You know, how far away from the home do you want to make your circle there? 5 miles, 50 miles, whatever your pleasure there. And by the time it's all said and done, it puts it together much how most people would probably think of like a social media. But of course, it's nothing at all like social media. It's very custom, it's very private, which social media is not. But it's kind of in the way that you would think of social media, how you communicate with one another. It puts it all together with people that have the same topics, the same interests that you do. And so the idea here, of course, is to put the power of communication and the power of education back in the hands of the common man. So, for example, let's say you have something happen to you or you experience something, and so you jump on there and you say, "This happened to me today." Maybe the first person comes back and says, "Well, I don't think that's fair. I don't like that. That upsets me. To be honest, I don't think they should be able to do that." Well, I mean, depending on the circumstance, that might be a very valid response to that. I don't know how much that's going to really be of help to you, though. As far as learning how to, handle that yourself. But say, maybe the next person jumps in and says, I don't think that they should be able to do that either. In fact, I know, that they can't do that. What I would do if I were similarly situated, I would be going down to my local county courthouse, the law library. If you didn't know, every county has a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library. I'd look up these words, these terms. And that should give you a good healthy start there. And then I'd watch this YouTube video, and that will explain some things, put some things in perspective for you that you might not have been aware of. Well, that's completely different. Now you're talking, some real information there. Now you might be getting somewhere. You might be onto something. Maybe the third person jumps in and says, that all is wonderful ideas. Also, myself, where I similarly situated, let's say hypothetically I was, you know, a year ago, I'd go to this website and I'd purchase this educational process. I'd go over here and do this, go over there and do that. Now you're really starting to get to the meat and potatoes of it. Now you're really starting to learn how to handle things on your own. And, of course, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that, doing your own due diligence and exercising any right that is available to you. And so if you haven't signed up yet, we do encourage you to sign up there for Grassfire Communications and share it with your friends and family. All right. Starting to wind down here. This next portion is called your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. As we're pertaining to all of the information providers here at your remedy, when you come aboard with an information provider, you pick an educational process and you come aboard with an information provider, you're doing just that. You're going directly with an information provider. To clarify here, the information provider pays for advertising at your remedy. This would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expense that they have associated with your particular process or educational material that you might be covering at that time. And so that kind of brings us to the real issue here, and that is, what is the what is your remedy's refund policy or exchange policy or credit policy? There is none. Again, when you come aboard with an information provider, you're doing just that. You're going directly with an info provider. We are just the advertising. So any question of a credit or a refund or anything in that sphere, that would all be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. And even then, that's very few and far between. Must be extenuating circumstances. You're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, I guess lastly here, I want to just take a moment and remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn. It's a good thing. But please remember, you must always be civil. You must always have tact. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we all get to learn something from it. All right, well, I guess that's going to do it for me for this moment. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and turn the call over here briefly to Redwood, and he will introduce our speaker for this evening.
Wonderful. Thank you, Martin. I appreciate you very much. A little housekeeping first. We have two first-time callers, one from Eaton Rapids, Michigan, the other from Detroit, Michigan. Like to find out how you heard about us and so forth. If you could, phone number ending in 1246. Hello.
Hello.
Hey there. How'd you hear about us?
Through Mike from Las Vegas.
Oh, that's wow. You're his friend?
You could say that, yes.
Heck yeah.
Really? I'm shocked. I really am. What's your first name, please?
Patrick.
Hello, Patrick. Welcome to the call. Mike's a good friend of ours here, and you're in good company. Let me pop this in here real quick.
Okay. Got it. Yeah.
And next is next question comes to Detroit, Michigan, ending in 3985. How'd you hear about us?
Through Jennifer in Wattsboro, New York.
Oh, okay. Jennifer Sue, sweetheart. And your first name, sir?
Sweet.
Spell it.
S-W-E-E.
Sweet. S-W-E-E. Very good. Welcome to the call, Mr. Sweet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this evening you're going to hear something that is really very important in your life, in that these are things that you were never prepared for, never shared or to understand or heard about, and there was a reason. Because if you learn about these things, you're not paying into the tax system that's generated not for the purpose of funding society, but for the purpose of keeping you in a position where you're more manageable. In other words, take away your money, and there's less things that you can accomplish and more things that you have to do that you would not normally do, just so that you continue to receive from the public trough. So tonight we're going to talk about Mr. Slevin's very and most unique LLC, Limited Liability Company. And through this limited liability company, if you are a employee working for someone, or if you're an entrepreneur and you currently have it as an established business, Mr. Slevin is going to share with you the benefits of this LLC and how it will put more money at the end of the day in your pocket than otherwise. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Mr. Slevin. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening, everybody. So Martin gave me a good lead in when he talked about going down to the law library at the local county courthouse and looking up things in the law library, because that's one place that you can also find the rules of statutory construction, which is how these people call lexicographers and legislative draftsmen. They have to follow these rules in order to write the legislation, which ends up being the codes and statutes and so forth. So one of the primary things in the rules of statutory construction is when a word or phrase is defined as a term, only that term's definition can be used when reading and or applying that particular statute. See, another one of these rules is when defining said term, there's often a list of things. And these list of things at the end of it, they must remain in the same family. And there's a Latin phrase for that, which I will not try to produce. So an example would be, the term edibles includes an apple, a banana, a grape, a rock, and a chicken. Well, obviously the rock is not in that same class. So therefore that definition would be invalid, unless it was something like a rock of clay, and clay happens to be edible. There's a survival thing all about clay and soil that can be used as a survival thing to be food, and therefore it would be edible. But we don't normally think of a rock in that particular way. And so this is some of the way that they use to misdirect people. So in the Internal Revenue Code at Section 701 definitions, it says, A, when used in this title where not otherwise distinctly expressed or manifestly incompatible with the intent thereof, one, person. The term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, a trust, estate, partnership, association, company, or corporation, end quote. So most everything falls into the same class except that word individual. So what is individual? Individual is not a name of anything. It is a delimiter. It means one of something. For what? A spotted lizard? A corporate officer? A one-eyed jack? Or could it be the term individual as defined in Black's Law 6th edition, which says, quote, existing as an indivisible entity, end quote. So an indivisible entity would be of the same class as a trust, estate, partnership, and so forth. So we go at 7701A2, it says the term partnership includes an unincorporated organization. Well, an unincorporated organization is the specific definition of a limited liability company, because when you organize a limited liability company, you get a certificate of organization. So the term partnership would include and could be read as being a limited liability company. Just for fun, look down at A20 and you'll find employee. And it says about 105 words down, it says the term employee shall include a full-time life insurance salesman who is considered an employee for the purposes of Chapter 21. So just in case you guys have been working all of your lives and you think you're an employee, only if you're a full-time life insurance salesman. So this is a little bit of the deception. So we go over in Title 26 United States Code, Chapter 1, Normal Taxes and Surtaxes, Section 701. And Title 26 is also known as the Internal Revenue Code. Quote, a partnership as such shall not be subject to the income tax imposed in this chapter, period. Cool, huh? Because you want to be where something is not subject to the tax. Second sentence, quote, persons carrying on business as partners shall be liable for the income tax only in their separate or individual capacities. There's that word individual again. What could that mean? So that this is a great layout that encompasses 99% of what's listed in the tax, the income tax law, the Internal Revenue Code. So the income tax is an excise tax, which can only be on activity, on carrying on business. That's the subject of the tax. And the income is the measure of the tax. But they write it backwards to dupe you. But this gives us a great situation of where we would want to build our house, if you will, on what foundation, or build our business house. You want to build it on something that is not subject to the income tax, right? That makes sense, right? So how do we do that? Well, our company builds a thing called a private firm. A private firm is, from the Flint v. Stone Tracy case, Supreme Court case in 1910, in which they said a private firm is not subject to the income tax. Not subject to means not liable for or immune. Not exempt, immune. Because exempt means you qualify, but we're going to exempt you from the penalty. So our company, in order to build these things, we have to do it a particular way and in particular places. And so we first send out an application to the client and say, hey, you know, let's figure out a name that you want your limited liability company to be. So we get all that laid out and get the funds transferred and everything, and we get rolling on this. And then one of our personnel goes to the Secretary of State of New Mexico, because New Mexico has some really cool ways of doing things. They go to that thing and they fill out an application. The application is called the Articles of Organization. And that form, that Articles of Organization, requires a minimum of two parties on it. These parties are known as the organizer and the registered agent, both of which can be other LLCs. So now think about that a moment. So you've got one LLC that owns another LLC that owns another LLC, because in New Mexico, the organizer, if nothing else is ever filed, it is thought to be and considered to be the owner on the public record at the Secretary of State's office. So once that form is filled out, sent in, the Secretary of State reviews it, or their clerk does, obviously. And they issue a certificate of organization. Now, you've heard of, you know, places like Delaware and Nevada and maybe Wyoming, they're supposed to be good places to either organize an LLC or incorporate a corporation. But their applications require a nominee list. They require people's names. Now, that they protect that list, but it still exists. In New Mexico, it simply does not exist. So once we have the certificate of organization in hand, then one of our workers who's never filed a 1040 U.S. individual income tax return and is therefore without the jurisdiction of the IRS goes to that website and files for a tax identification number known as an employer identification number, or EIN, for this new company or this new LLC. There's now a number of questions are asked on that application to get an EIN. And one of them is, why is the LLC requesting an EIN? And there's several answers, but we always choose for banking purposes. And the subheading because the subheading says this. Select this option if the reason for applying for the EIN is strictly to satisfy banking requirements or local law. Did you hear anything about taxation in there? Nope, because they understand, even though they try to hide it, that the limited liability companies are not subject to the income tax. So once that EIN is issued by the IRS, the person that made that application is known as the sole member on that paperwork at that point in time, and that member holds a meeting of the company membership, which they're the only one, and they commission a manager, because an LLC only has one officer, and that is known as a manager. You know, corporations have presidents, CFOs, directors, and then partnerships have limited partners and general partners, but limited liability companies only have one officer, and it is a manager. So that manager then takes the certificate of organization, the EIN paperwork, and their commission as manager, otherwise known as a letter of authority, and goes into a local brick and mortar bank and gets a checking account for this new company. And it comes with a debit card with only the company's and the manager's title on it, not their name. And then it and it's got electronic banking and all the bells and whistles that you're used to in today's banking world. All right, so then we bring all that back to the office, and another person, one of our personnel, gets a pay-as-you-go cell phone, and we program it with the electronic banking. We also include Square App and Cash App. Square App is a point of sale. It allows you to take debit cards and credit cards for to pay for the new company's produced products and services. And then Cash App is a peer-to-peer transfer, which it works really well, really nice and quick. So at that point, and by the way, Square and Cash App can both be fleshed out to eventually have a debit card and checking account for the new company as well. So once this is all up and tied up and done, then you've got three checking accounts and three separate debit cards all going, paying into the company coffers. So if one of them gets fouled up for whatever reason, you got some backups already in the works. All right. We put all this in a box, literally, and ship it out to the client. And when they receive this business in a box, they now are equipped to carry on business worldwide income tax free. Not a bad place to be, right? So how can we use these private firms? So once you receive the thing, that's a small business, and you can just carry on business and sell your services or your widgets or whatever, both in person, online, or whatever other business transmission you have. So these things can then be interlinked, and what I like to do is use the dentist example. So a dentist practices dentistry. So we can have the practice be owned by one LLC. And so the dentist needs equipment to do his practice. And so he has a bunch of chairs and drills and so forth. All that equipment is owned by another LLC and rented back to the first one, rented back to the practice. So then you normally have to have a building to do your dentistry in. So a third LLC would own the building and rent it back to the practice. Then you typically have people, you know, in the front office and then hygienists and that sort of thing. So they would each work under a fourth LLC, which is contracting with the practice for their services. And then each of them could have an LLC as well, so that all of the contracting that's going on in this worker situation is under LLCs and their EINs, not people and their Social Security numbers. All right, so what that does, what those four or five, if you will, LLCs co-joined in this way, they make the dentist practice judgment-proof. Because, you know, we live in a litigious society. Everybody likes to sue everybody. So if somebody were to sue the practice then and get a judgment the dentist himself has malpractice insurance, so he's covered. But then, so the basically the only thing the practice LLC has is its checking account, which obviously could be drained quite readily. There, because everything else within the practice is rented from other LLCs, the judgment can't affect those. And so this is a way of eliminating all income tax in the practice and making it as just about as bomb-proof judgment-wise as possible. Another great thing about these private firms is estate planning. So these are built in perpetuity, which means they can never die. And the phrase for a company being alive is in good standing. So we keep these private firms in good standing. So mom and dad, they got a car, a boat, and house. And these are all known as titled assets because they have a title to them that is typically registered at the county's registrar's office. So rather than having a will and then going through probate and estate taxes if mom and papa pass away, they just put everything into the company name, into the LLC's name, the private firm's name, and then they commission the kids and or the kid's guardian as the manager for that LLC and with instructions. So in the event of the demise of mom and pop, the new managers just pull out their paperwork and carry on business as, you know, in perpetuity as long as they do, and they handle the assets, whatever that needs to be done, or whatever they're directed to do. No probate, no estate taxes. As I mentioned before about the in the dentist example, you can, and you're right now you're working in what's called a W-2 situation. It's between an employer and an employee relationship. Both of those terms, employer and employee, are defined in the tax code. So we don't want to ever use those when we're talking about this. You have the LLC and you have the worker, and the worker performs because the LLC obviously is just a piece of paper. So the worker performs in the name of the LLC, contracts, the LLC contracts with another company and replaces the employer-employee situation. And there's a thing out there called a burden rate. Burden rate is about 1.5 to 1.6 times the salary of an employee. That's what the bottom line cost is to the company. So we'll use Joe, and it works for IBM. So he learns about this. He gets a private firm, a new LLC, and he goes to his boss and says, "Hey, boss, how'd you like to make a quick 25% on your labor cost?" And any business owner or manager is always looking to cut cost, right? So gets the manager's attention right away, and then he says, "Okay, well, you've been telling me I've been doing this great job, and you're paying me about $100,000 a year, and then but you're taking out all this taxes and all this, doing all this paperwork, right? So what we're going to do is I'm going to back out of this contract, and we're going to substitute in this limited liability company." So IBM signs a contract with a limited liability company for Joe's services. Joe comes into the same time, uses the same tools for services, the same customers, whatever it is. And then instead of paying him, $4,500 a month or twice a month, then the IBM would only write one check a month, and we'll say that it'll be $10,000 to the LLC. And then at the end of the year, the only paperwork IBM would have to do is one 1099 form with the EIN of the LLC. And so that comes out to $120,000. So instead of paying $160,000 for Joe's service, IBM is now paying $120,000, which is roughly 25%. So Joe now, instead of making $100,000 and having 40% of that taken by the government, he now makes $120,000. Does that sound like a good idea? I think so. And we, at this company, we've done this and helped people negotiate this, and we can assist anybody who comes on with us. So something that has just come about is a new information provider under Michael's umbrella, and he goes by the name Tony the Tiger. So Tiger has the ability to create a business line of credit for these new LLCs. So without going into great detail, you basically pay $50,000, and he gets you a $1 million credit line. And so, that means that this new LLC can go out and borrow up to $1 million to advance the business, whatever that may be. So those are the things that we got in our plate, and we would be loving to share them with you. What are your questions?
All right, well, go ahead and get into questions and answers portion then, folks. Star 2 on your keypad if you have a question. Press star 2 on your keypad if you have a question or comment. And I will unmute you one at a time and call upon you and keep ourselves in an orderly fashion in that way. And, of course, if you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, freedomsradio.com, type your questions or comments in the blue bar there at this time. But please don't forget to click submit. You won't see it if you don't click the submit button. And give it just a moment here to populate. All right, well, let's not bombard Mr. Slevin all at once.
Wow, that must have been a really good explanation. It just covered all the bases.
It apparently did. I'm seeing a lot of deer in the headlight looks. No, there's nothing populating here. I just got another brush. So do we want to maybe continue on?
What do you think about sharing some airtime with Tony the Tiger next week?
Oh, I'd love to.
That'd be cool.
Good. Good. We'll give him a call. You can give him a call and start it if you would. That would be great.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I going to bed early tonight or what? Ah, now Las Vegas has arrived.
And Mr. Edward, I think you meant to say it's great.
That's right, I did.
All right, Michael, go ahead, sir. You're unmuted.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everybody. So for $50,000, does he guarantee that the LLC gets a line of credit? Is a line of credit through a bank or a lending institution, financial institution, or?
Yes.
Federal
there are multiple institutions involved. It's
mafia.
I don't want to say a complex procedure, but it's necessary that you follow the correct steps, and Tony has gotten these down. So, but the whole point is, you know, it always takes time to build credit in a new company. And, so, you know, just like, you know, when a kid turns 18 and they, you know, go to work, then to build their credit, it takes some time and some effort and some payments and so forth and all that stuff. So it's the same basic way as a company, and the company has to get it done in Bradstreet number and so forth and so on. So there's a lot of this, that, and the other, and that's why it costs so much. But if you're able to go out and purchase, they get a $1 million loan at reasonable rates and not, you know, something like 12 or 15% interest or whatever, then if your company or your endeavors are situated so that you could handle that kind of volume in the business, then this can jumpstart your business because, you know, operating capital is one of the things that businesses always have. It was always a problem for businesses, you know, keeping everything coming and going. So if you've got that $1 million cushion, then you know, your lag between being paid for your products and services and or services is greatly mitigated. So that's one of the reasons it is what it is. But, you know, we're talking big numbers, but, you know, some of our clients that have these private firms run more than $1 million, in one case, $2 million a year through these things. And so we have that kind of experience in their repertoire as well. Does that answer your question?
Pretty much. I mean, that's only 5%. That's not bad.
No, yeah, let me add that about 6 weeks ago, I began, is it 6 weeks now, Mr. Slevin, that we began?
It's pretty close to that. Pretty close to that.
Yeah. And I received a Experian report already showing, one report anyway, showing that picture, that cred, if you would. So I'm working on it.
Well, anybody in business, you're either going to grow or go. Unless you're in business for fun, then you must have a lot of money to waste.
Well, in business for fun means it's a hobby.
Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting. Very. I'll be looking at that real hard. I hope you have Tony on there so that we can ask him some questions.
Yeah, we're going to try to have him on next week to add to with Mr. Slevin's call, try to merge the two together because they go hand in glove. Also, Michael, I don't need pictures. I just need you to text me the name on your birth certificate, the current post location you're in, and the county that your post location is in. Just get that to me as you can, and I'll knock out the affidavit for you, get you started.
Right. Okay. I'll get that to you tonight.
Thank you, sir. I'll do it tomorrow.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Yeah, now, forgive me here, Mr. Slevin, Mr. Edward, just, you know, I can't help but wonder here the way that, fascinated the way that you explained that. Is this going to be an offer that I can't refuse, or?
No, this is, there's a labyrinth of ways to get this done, and Mr. Tiger has been trained on negotiating the labyrinth is the easiest way to say it.
Okay. All right. Kent, you've been unmuted, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen. Yeah. Mr. Slevin, can you hear me okay?
I can, Kent.
Okay. So I want to ask this question. On this line of credit, is this going to be predicated on what assets the business already owns? Or are they putting up those assets? And could we look at this fee of $50,000 being similar to that which happens in the real estate business in what they have called in the past an origination fee, where there's a percentage that you pay in order to get the mortgage? But in that case, they're using the mortgage on the property and the alleged value of the property to back that to be the basis of that origination fee and also to back the loan.
Something like that, not precisely, because this is an open line, not just directed into real estate and using those real estate terms, but it's something like having a fees being paid enhances the credit worthiness of the limited liability company. And like I said,
okay.
Mr. Tiger would be the one to flesh that out if you wish.
Okay. So you don't know, you can't say for sure whether there would be additional quote unquote origination fees involved depending on what the line of credit was being used for.
No, we can't make any forecast as to, you know, because without knowing exactly what we're talking about as far as the asset that's going to be attained and or the business or the whatever, you know, whatever the loan money is going to be spent for, you know, this is the vehicle. And then we, you know, hammer out the details as necessary.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. Again, star two keypad. Star two, folks, on your keypad if you have a question, or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side. Let's go ahead and get those questions in here if we have them. We will be bidding Mr. Slevin an early evening. Get another refresh here on the Freedoms Radio side. Well, I think that might do it for us.
Well, y'all have a great evening and a beautiful Christmas, excuse me, Easter season.
All right, Mr. Edward, we're going to go ahead and let Mr. Slevin go here early.
All right. Well, if it's going to be early, it's going to be early. Thank you all for joining us this evening. We'll see you this coming Saturday with Justice Beshear, when Justice Beshear will be sharing with you how to own nothing but control everything, otherwise being known as becoming judgment-proof. And, of course, there's a tremendous amount of scuttlebutt now. We're even hearing from Justice Beshear that he's expecting, quote, any day, end quote. He's thinking that it'll happen for Passover. Passover is April 5. So that's what he's thinking is going to come from. The greatest exchange of wealth took place when the Egyptians turned over all their gold, their silver, their fine linens, and things like that to the Israelites and said, get out. That was the greatest exchange of wealth then, and they're expecting the next greatest exchange of wealth this coming week. 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that, sometime in April. Anyways, that's where we are, and thank you for joining us. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.